All right, everybody. We've got another edition of the Quack 12 Pac-12 roster review, in which we go through every single Pac-12 team and we break down that roster with our man Hifliday. And today we've got a very fun one. We got a wonderful guest of the Quack-12, a friend of the Quack-12, even though he is a fan of our most ancient rival, the Oregon State Beavers. That is right. We got Travis Johannes on Twitter, Travis_Johannes, which is Johannes. Travis, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. That's sweet. I'm a friend. I didn't realize that. I thought we were just, you know, acquaintances, but you've bumped it up to friend. That's cool. I'm all right with that.
It was frenemy.
Let's go with frenemy.
That's fair.
Okay, you're Hifliday's frenemy, apparently. So, my man. Well, you know what? I'm gonna bump that down to frenemy actually as well, because I just remembered the results of last season's football game. I'll get into this because this is a nutso season for the Beavers, not just because of the global pandemic, but because the record says 2 wins, 5 losses. But in some weird dimension out there, this is a 6-win, 1-loss team, you know, if you squint your eyes, because so many of these games came down to the very last play. And I'll just really quickly run through this and we'll get your takes on these. So we started off versus Washington State. That is a 28-38 loss, but a little bit closer than that score even says there, because OSU trailed 31-14 early in the fourth quarter, but they cut the lead to 3 with under 3 minutes to play. However, they surrender a late touchdown. Junior Jamar Jefferson, who is a fantastic player to watch, even when he was playing against us, it's hard to root against the guy. He had a monster day, rushed for 120 yards, 3 touchdowns, added 5 receptions, 50 yards, and that was just the beginning of a great season for him. A week after that, at Washington, another close loss, 21-27. I know a ton of Duck fans were rooting for you in this one. Jamar Jefferson, again, 133 yards. Jaden Grant returned a blocked punt for a touchdown. Only 3 points were scored in the second half. And then a bullshit call gives the game to Washington. We'll say that. This is a biased podcast, so we'll say that. Versus California the week after that, you get a win. This was a wonky-ass game, a very strange one, against 2 winless teams going into this. 31-27 victory for the Beavers, however. Tristan Jebbia, he ran, he caught, and he passed a touchdown. 3 different scores. Jefferson ran for 196 yards, including a game-opening 70-yard touchdown. A 75-yard touchdown on the first play of scrimmage. And then, oh boy, you beat the Ducks in the Grass Bowl, the Platypus Cup, the Oregon Classic, or whatever you want to call it, except for one name. It was a 41-38 victory. Oregon took a 24-13 lead in the halftime, but the fog of war changed the tide in favor of Oregon State. Chance Nolan actually comes in and scores the game-winning touchdown with 33 seconds left to cap off a 55-yard drive that began with under 2 minutes left to play. Jamar Jefferson got 226 yards, which is actually the record, I believe the rushing record for this rivalry game. And then against Utah, a loss, 24-30. Again, so freaking close. Came down to the end. You just weren't able to put the plays together to get that victory. The week after that, a 3-point loss to Stanford. man, that's tough. Chance Nolan threw for 221 yards and 3 touchdowns in his second career start. And then against Arizona State, this is truly the only game where it was kind of not particularly close. There was no real comeback effort in this one because you lose to Arizona State 33-46. So that's a lot of feels in this one. I mean, you get a victory over Oregon, which I imagine felt awesome. But overall, what do you do with this season if you're an Oregon State fan?
Well, I'm going to be honest. When you first said the record of 2-5. I was like, no, they won more games than that, right? Because in my brain, that season went better than 2-5. But yeah, it was a weird year that I don't really have a good answer for. It's, I don't know what you do with it. You enjoy it. You enjoy winning that game against your rivals there. Mm. But I don't know that you can get a whole lot of answers from it. It shows this team is very competitive, and they can hang in with just about everyone except for Arizona State for some reason. but it was that year that shows you're right there. You're right on that edge of like being competitive and being a team that, you know, might make a bowl game. It also kind of sucked seeing them not be able to finish some of those games. So many of those games, they just looked like, okay, we're right there. We can do this. And then something went wrong. Something. So I don't really have a good answer for what you take from that season because it was so damn weird.
That's fair. We've been hearing that answer quite a bit in these roster reviews after 2020.
Well, the thing that's remarkable, I had to go back and double check this. They said it on the spring game, and then I went back and was like, oh, it's actually true, is that in the last two seasons, 10 of Oregon State's 19 games, you know, the majority were decided by 8 points or less. And Oregon State is 4-6 in those games, you know, 2-3 both seasons. And there's a couple more in there, you know, where it's like 10 or 11 points, you know, like they're right there and they've been on the losing side of those coin flips. But, you know, what that means is that it's a program that's not really getting blown out. Like it used to be that Oregon State was a team that was getting blown out, losing to FCS teams. Those days are over. And number two, you know, they're playing all these games close and they still like, even with just, you know, a couple of ball bounces going the other way, you know, they're on the happy, like they probably should have made a bowl game in 2019. You know, I think if, you know, 2020 was a normal year, they would have made a bowl game. You know, there's room to grow. Like there's upside here. Like they're not even done at this level, let alone, you know, whatever the next, you know, step is in terms of elevation. Like I definitely think the Jonathan Smith's project is on the right track and they're, you know, it's a growing team and all those close games. Like I know they're heartbreaking for Beavs fans, I'm sure, but like it indicates the program is getting a lot better. Like it's not your coaches quitting on you in the middle of the season. And that wasn't that long ago.
They're in a very good place compared to where they were. Like you said, a couple years ago when you had coaches leaving mid season randomly and leaving $12 million on the table or whatever it was. Cause they just couldn't wait to get out. I don't know. There's more to that story that I don't know. And I think one day we're going to figure it out, but it is, they're in a much better place, but you do kind of want to see, hopefully soon, see that jump from, okay, we're right there, right next to it, to crossing that line into bowl games and a team that everybody kind of circles on their schedule is like, okay, they might not be the best team, but they're going to come in here and they're going to make it hard for us. So
before we dive into the particulars of the roster, one of the weird things about how 2020 went down is that the transfer portal has sort of really taken over the way that a lot of teams are doing their, you know, quote unquote recruiting, and especially with the eligibility holiday, meaning that like there's a lot of roster management to be done here. And one of the things that I've really admired about Jonathan Smith, and one of the reasons why I think he's turned the program around and put it on a good trajectory so quickly, is that I think he's one of the better roster managers in the Pac-12. Like, I already think he's one of the better offensive play callers, maybe the best offensive play caller in the Pac-12. Like, I really appreciate, like, the elegance of his offensive system and, like, the way he's doing play calling within it. And if you need any comparison, watch the University of Washington's football team, where they're trying to run the same offense without him, you know, where he was the offensive coordinator there for years. And like, there's a difference between the elegant version of that offense that Jonathan Smith calls and whatever the hell they're doing in Seattle. But beyond that, I think that Jonathan Smith is a really good roster manager. And you know, he's not pulling down like a bunch of blue chip talent. And so it's not easy to see unless you dive deep into these rosters, but that's what I do. And you know, it becomes very clear that like, it's a very solid team from top to bottom. You know, there's no something that I see all over the Pac-12, including teams that recruit better than Oregon State does, or at least recruits more four stars than they do, is that like they overload at certain positions, but then they're super thin at other ones. Or they're totally imbalanced across the classes so that like suddenly all their linebackers graduate and they don't have anybody to play, or they're playing their starters from the first snap to the last snap in every game and not giving the backups any time. So that when the backups have to come in for whatever reason, or just do starters graduate or leave, you know, that they're starting over from scratch. And like, you don't see any of that. Not a single one of the roster problems that are common to the Pac-12 happen on Oregon State's roster, except for lack of talent. But other than that, like it's solid mid to high three stars at every position who are thoroughly experienced, balanced across classes, and the backups get a lot of playing time. And so like, I really think that's a crucial element, and Jonathan Smith has totally nailed it. I've been talking for a while. I'll stop there. Travis, have you noticed the same thing? Are there any hidden complaints that you've got about him as a roster manager that I've missed?
No, I think you actually hit it all really well. I think he's done a very good job of taking a program that was not in a good place. And the transfer portal has been a blessing for Oregon State and sure. for Jonathan Smith. He's been able to get some talent that can come in right away and contribute, which it's hard for Oregon State to do that. You know, in the prep ranks, they're usually not going to get a whole lot of kids who can come in their freshman year and be studs. But if you get, you know, you get someone that's has some experience and they might be a sophomore or junior, but they can come in and start right away, it helps you get back on the winning track a little bit quicker. And I think you're starting to see that trickle down a little bit to the high school ranks as far as the prep classes are getting a little better. The biggest concerns, and I don't really know if this is probably a concern at a lot of schools, especially on the West Coast, just because the lack of talent as far as offensive and defensive line, that's usually available.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some questions there. They haven't been great at loading up on the line quite yet. I think a lot of those issues on the O-line have been kind of covered up. Because they have a really, really good O-line coach.
Yeah, I totally agree.
He's been able to take what he has and make it look really good. The D-line, it's still a gigantic question mark. They did just get a kid, and I cannot, and now I'm drawing a blank, because he's not official,
Keonti Shad from Minnesota.
There we go. I knew you'd know it. Yes, that was the name. But beyond that, I think Jonathan Smith has done a really good job of kind of building this team to where it is right now. Obviously, there's always room for improvement, like I noted in the lines. But I think as Oregon State fans, you got to be pretty happy with the roster he's been able to build in a few short years.
Yeah, the lines are always what comes last. You know, that's the, you know, you have to really establish yourself as a, because you're right. There's just not enough, you know, big bodies on the West Coast, or really to go around at all. But definitely on the West Coast. And then on top of that, like the West Coast, compared to the rest of the country, was more likely to shut down high school football in 2020. And so you have like less evaluation time, for the linemen, you have less, you know, training and conditioning time, you know, and those guys like evaluating how their bodies are going to transform. Like it's a lot harder task to do than evaluating like a wide receiver where you're just like, well, he's tall and he runs real fast. All right. You know, like linemen are sort of a different beast. So that's pretty understandable. The thing that is really curious to me about the 2021 recruiting cycle for Jonathan Smith is that, you know, they only signed 11 guys in the 2021 cycle. Initially, it was only 9 by the end of the signing day in February, and then they added 2 more late. And then it's also a little weird because one of the dudes that they signed in 2021, Orion Maile-Kafusi, is taking an LDS mission. However, they are getting in a different guy who had taken a mission and is now coming back, Saluni Simisi, I think. And And so it's, you know, back to 11. And everybody sort of interpreted that as, actually, I got that guy's name backwards. It's Samisi Saluni, sorry. Anyway, they everybody interpreted that as like, oh, well, Jonathan Smith is going to play heavily in the transfer portal. And a lot of, you know, Pac-12 teams have done exactly that. In fact, Utah is still doing it. Like, they're still adding guys to the transfer portal. Like, I think they've added five guys since we recorded a podcast with them. It's crazy. But anyway, I digress. The thing that's been odd about Oregon State is that we all expected them to add, like, you know, 15 guys to the transfer portal, and they've really only added five that I can count so far. And as far as I counted up, they still have nine initial counters left. And I'm a little confused why that is. Like, I sort of expected, you know, more action here. Is that, do you know if that's a situation where Jonathan Smith is content with to only take 16 and it's going to stand pat? Or are you expecting like a substantial number of new guys to be added before fall camp? And like, we're recording this podcast too early. What do you think?
I think they're still kind of hunting through the transfer portal. I wouldn't be surprised to get a few more. I don't know that it'll be a ton more. I think we're kind of getting, I mean, it's June. Yeah. So I don't know if what their scholarship situation is completely. I don't know if they actually have that full 25.
Well, that's the thing that's really hard to keep track of is, you know, because the eligibility holiday, you have a bunch of folks who otherwise would have run out of eligibility. And so they're like, oh, well, they get a pass on the 85 cap. And like, oh, boy, it may be that they're bumping up against it. It's sort of a crazy situation to have nine initial counters left in June, you know, like that. Other than Stanford, I can't think of a single program, you know, that winds up doing that. And all due respect, Oregon State is no Stanford. So, I guess we're just going to have to keep our eyes peeled because I think you're right. I think there probably are a couple of guys to be, you know, brought out of the transfer portal. Like, you know, it was kind of fun. Like, I'll go back to Utah. It was funny. Like, I was kind of knocking them for their wide receiver depth. And then, you know, in the immediate days follow, he'd take two more wide receivers. And I was like, oh, well, that, I guess you saw it the same way, Kyle. reader beware. All right, let's start out talking about the quarterbacks. Looks like everybody from last year is coming back with the exception of Jackson Crist and Nick Moore. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay.
So this looks pretty straightforward to me. You know, Chris Njebia was injured last. He was the starter last year. He was injured. He had to miss spring. But I figure if he, you know, is 100% healthy again, that it's his job in the fall. And then Chance Nolan was his backup. Looks like he'll be the number two. And then I would guess the two different freshmen would battle it out for the number three spot. Ben Gulbranson from last year's class and Sam Vidlak from this year's class. Gulbranson wasn't available for the spring game, so I didn't get to see him throw. Vidlak was getting a lot of reps. He looked fine. And then I guess Jack Coletto is also there, the inside linebacker slash wildcat quarterback slash he's the guy who'll do anything for the team. Like, Jonathan Smith tells him, like, I need this car dumped in the lake and no questions asked. Like, Jack Coletto is the guy to do it. Is that how you see the quarterback situation as well, or are there any surprises you think might be on the horizon?
I think that's probably how it lays out. I don't think it's certain. The fact that Jebbia is still not fully healed.
Okay.
Is obviously a concern.
He had surgery.
He hurt himself in the Oregon game there.
Yeah. We didn't see him for the rest of the season after that
fateful. So I think he, if fully healthy, definitely has the upper hand in that battle, but you saw some nice things from Chance Nolan. I'm curious if he's, you know, if he's been able to grow a little bit more in the system. I could see him really pushing Jebbia. And also, I think the coaching staff really likes both the young kids. I don't think either of them would necessarily get the number one job, but I don't think it's impossible, especially Gulbranson, because he's been in the program for a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's most likely going to break down more or less the way you said with Jebbia 1, Nolan 2. I would say Gulbranson 3 just because he has a little more experience, and then Vidlak 4. But
Was I know that Gulbranson was out for the spring game. Was he out for all of spring practice too, or did they just hold him out for that one game?
I think he was mostly just out for the game. And okay. I don't want to speculate what it was.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, it's just, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I think of this as a pretty quarterback-friendly system, and yet, you know, both Gibbia and Nolan had one, you know, their NCAA passer rating was pretty low in 2020. Not that that stopped them from beating the Ducks or anything, because every quarterback has their greatest game against the Ducks, so it seems. But, like, yeah, I sort of see it the same way, that, like, there's a clear pecking order here, but, like, on the other hand, I think there's definitely room for improvement at the quarterback position, and I guess I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be fall out of my chair shocked if, like, oh, what the hell, Vidlak takes it, you know, wins it. Like, he didn't look bad in the spring game, not at all, you know, like, you know what I mean?
It would be surprising if Vidlak or Gulbranson won it, but it wouldn't be necessarily, like you said, falling out of your chair. I think it's definitely in the realm of possibilities.
All right, running backs. Losing Jamar Jefferson, the great running back, on the heels of losing Art Pierce. So it's sort of almost like also one of the backups transferred out, Calvin Tyler. So it's a bit of a reset in the running back room. On the other hand, I think the running back room, you know, looks fairly decent here because they're bringing back another one of the backups, BJ Baylor, who's been there for a while, you know, who's been a, you know, pretty steady running back. And they got a transfer from South Carolina, Deshaun Fenwick. He was the second running back behind Kevin Harris at South Carolina, who was like a 1,000-yard rusher. And so, like, he's had 97 carries over the last 3 years for about 5.4 yards per carry, which is a pretty good number. And doing that behind another starting running back. Like, so I, you know, that looks like a pretty good 1-2 punch to me. And then on top of that, they're bringing back Teron Madison and Trey Lowe, the transfer from Washington, who I don't think we've seen yet. Isaiah Newell from the 2020 class. They brought in another freshman, Demir Collins, who's like a high 3-star in 2021. I'll stop there. If I got all that right, those six guys of the running back room.
Yeah, there's right now, I think there's a lot of good depth there. Mm-hmm. You obviously don't yet know that you have, and I'm going to go out and say you don't have a Jamar Jefferson in there, at least not yet. You know, one of those guys may be able to grow into that, but Jamar Jefferson was absolutely special.
Yeah.
And you're not going to replace that. Actually, as we, in the beginning, when we went through the Oregon State schedule from last season and the highlights and how many of those games listed off just ridiculous rushing totals from Jamar Jefferson, I got a little sad inside knowing that we're not going to see that again. But
yeah, he went to the Lions to do play, yeah, right? Yeah. I believe they're making a little like Pac-12 little powerhouse, the Lions, now, because I'm trying to remember. Sewell went there too, right? And then Washington had some amazing player that I'm going to insult by not remembering. So
there you go. Was it one of their DBs?
I can't remember. And I hope a Washington fan is listening to this and just like freaking out. And yeah. I just know that, yeah, I did this on purpose.
Just know that we don't really care.
See, this is why we invited you on, to throw shade at the Huskies.
I'm still salty from that bullshit call. So I just, oh, I, man. But yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of talent in that running back room, and I just, right now it's going to be interesting to see who sort of takes that number one role, or if they even really have necessarily a number one guy, or if they just go basically running back by committee and a bunch of dudes get out there and get a handful of rushes every game.
Or just do the trade, like when they had Artavis Pierce and Jamar Jefferson, like they were just, you know, trading off carries, and I could totally see Baylor and Fenwick doing that and being totally fine doing that. Or one of them, you know, gets the RB1 spot and the other gets the RB2, and there's still four more guys behind them. Yeah, like I would project this somewhere between pretty good and at least reliable. And the other thing is that we're talking about is that, like, we're not talking about like 2 stars and walk-ons here, you know, for the rest of the room, right? Like every one of these guys is high 3-star. You know, and there's six of them. Like, it is inconceivable that Oregon State would run out of running backs and not have anybody reliable who can carry the ball. You know what I mean? Like, their depth is at the very least adequate. Which, like, there have been years for Oregon State where I sort of questioned that, and not so anymore. So yeah, I think you're totally right about that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We've got a new running back coach.
That's right. It's
Petrie went to the Bears, actually.
Yeah.
Joined up with Artavis Pierce and Brian Null.
And got A.J. Stewart from Arizona, although he had previously been with, I think, BYU and Rice was their running backs coach for a while.
P.S., yeah. It was Levi Onwuzurike who went to the Huskies.
Although one of the best defensive linemen in the Pac-12.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be watching the Lions, that's for sure. Anyways.
God bless you. I gave up when they couldn't make anything out of Joey Harrington.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm setting myself up for failure here.
Is that your read on the running back room, too, that it's, you know, somewhere between pretty good and at least adequate?
Yeah, I think there's too much talent there for someone not to step up and at least be a good or pretty good. Yeah. Pac-12 running back. So yeah,
and potentially it's another Art Pierce, Jamar Jefferson situation where there's two great running backs in the same room, maybe more. You know, like we haven't exactly seen it yet, but they are returning two backup running backs who have, you know, like close on to 100 carries for their career. You know, it's not like, you know, it's a pig and a poke, right? Like we know what both of those guys, you know, are capable of carrying the ball without dropping it. So like, yeah, you know, I didn't see any reason to worry about that room at all.
It's going to be interesting to see what Demir Collins can do in his first year. He has the biggest potential to kind of be that like, oh, this guy's real good. This is fun.
Yeah. Let's talk about the tight ends, because it's interesting to me. After 2019, they lost Noah Togiai, who I think was Oregon State's best tight end in a long time. But they still retained Teagan Catoriano and Luke Musgrave, and like those guys were sort of, if I had to trot out like exhibit A for what I was saying earlier about Jonathan Smith's roster management in terms of like, just because you have a great starter doesn't mean that you shouldn't be giving a bunch of reps to your backup, because guess what? You're eventually going to not have him. Like, that's exactly what happened going into 2020. And it's like they lost one great tight end, and then they wound up having two pretty damn good tight ends. It's like two steps forward, one step back. Like, that's the way to do it. That's how you walk forward. I think that those two have the job locked down. There's the four other guys in the room, Jake Overman, Tommy Spencer, and they brought in two guys in the 2021 cycle, JT Byrne and Gabe Milbourne. I pretty much just expect to see Catoriano and Musgrave on every snap, and the rest of the guys are depth. Do you see it that way too?
Yeah, I mean, barring injury, I think maybe one of those younger guys pops up and starts, makes it a little more interesting, but I definitely think, yeah, you're probably going to see those same two from last year run out most of the time.
But, I mean, it's a big gap, right? Like, it's those two who are, like, 2018, 2019 guys and who have, you know, caught something like 30, 40 catches in their careers each, and then, like, Jake Overman has one catch, and the rest, you know, it's two 2020 guys and two 2021 guys, and none of them have really caught the ball ever, so it's like it's a big cliff. If one of Catoriano or Musgrave are not available, who do you think's the next man up?
At this point, I'd probably say Overman.
Okay, that's what I figured, too. I don't think there's a lot more to say about the tight ends, unless you got anything.
No, it's a pretty easy group to analyze with this team.
Yeah, no, well, it's a solid group. Well, it's interesting. There is sort of remember a couple of years ago where every team in the Pac-12 was moving to a spread offense, like everybody wanted to look like Chip Kelly's offense. What I've noticed in the last year or two or three is that a lot of teams are moving more to a two tight end quasi pro style offense. Like there's Arizona State is, Utah definitely is with Andy Ludwig came in. There's a bunch of teams that are doing that. And on the other hand, I go look at their tight end room and like there's a bunch of teams that want to do that and don't have the tight ends for it. Like Arizona doesn't, Arizona State doesn't, Cal doesn't really. And on the other hand, Oregon State, hey, there you go, man. Catoriano and Musgrave, two pretty solid tight ends. Are they, you know, NFL tight ends? Well, honestly, I was about to make fun of them, and then I realized, like, well, maybe they are, actually. I don't really know. But they you know, they're certainly experienced. They're certainly reliable. And like I was saying with Jonathan Smith, like, you know, I expect that it's probably going to be the case that he rotates in some of these other guys too, so they start getting reps. Although I don't think I think Katoriano and Musgrave were both going to stick around for 2022, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would assume so.
So, like, there's less of a need to get those backups some reps this year, but maybe we see them a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's. I think obviously they'll get some run, but yeah, I think they're. You're not necessarily running them out there hoping that they're going to be ready for next year or anything. You just run them out there and see what you got.
Well, hopefully Oregon State gets involved in some games where they're far enough ahead that they can put the backups in and are not in one score games all the damn time.
That would be really nice. That would be fun to see. I think the only game we started seeing backups was that Arizona State game.
Yeah, right.
And that was not because you're far enough up. It's because you're so far down. Yeah. I'm like, eh, we'll see what these guys got.
That was a big turnaround because, I mean, Oregon State was doing really well against them in 2019, too. Like, that was a weird game. 2020 was a weird season. I think we've said that pretty often. All right, let's talk about the wide receivers. Losing one guy who I was sort of puzzled about why they were losing, Colby Taylor, right? Like, I think he was like neck and neck with Trevon Badford for being the number one receiver. Any idea why he took off?
Colby, he retired. That was right.
Yeah. What's up with that?
I know he just had a lot of injuries, and I don't know exactly. I don't know. Pushed him over the edge to maybe just accumulation. That was kind of a sad thing to see because he definitely has shown a lot of talent. He was. Not necessarily a stud, but he's one of those guys you knew you could count on to make some solid catches.
Yeah, he's definitely a reliable receiver. Yeah, no, I agree. And it's just always weird, you know, when in a situation like this where it's an eligibility holiday and he's pretty high up on the list, you know, for a guy to walk away when he doesn't have to. And sometimes that can be a sign that there's some sort of trouble in the program. So I was sort of poking around to see if that was the case. And it sounds like, no, not he didn't punch Jonathan Smith in the face and, you know, storm off. He just decided, I'm done with football.
If he did, they did a good job keeping it real.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, no. I know he had battled some injuries through most of his career, and I don't know if he just kind of got to that point where he's like,
yeah, no. I mean, he's been around since 2017. Yeah, it's not like he's quitting as a freshman. He had a long productive career. We'll wish him well. Bringing back the other five guys who had 100 plus catches. Trevon Badford, I already mentioned, was the top one. Also, Tyjon Lindsey, who was the in addition to catching the ball, was also the sweep man. He was the guy who's getting all those sweep runs with Jonathan Smith likes using, and he's pretty effective at them.
He also threw a touchdown pass. That's
nice.
That was Tyjon Lindsey, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, he has the highest QB rating or passer rating for any of the quarterbacks in the rooms. Way to go. Bring back Zariah Benson or Beeson and Treshawn Harrison, and also by far my favorite, Champ Flemings. I think that's a pretty solid wide receiver core. And on top of that, there's a bunch of, you know, there's, I think, six more dudes in the room. I think there's a, you know, pretty good group. I don't know that any of them are going to knock your socks off, but I think they're reliable. I think they know this offense. Do you disagree?
No, I think that's a very solid group. And bringing in Micaiah Tung,
mm-hmm.
just another, we're talking about that transfer portal.
Talented
kid can come in. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get a whole lot of play right away, but there's a bunch of talent in that room.
It's sort of
similar to the running back situation where you might not have right now. You might not look at it and go, oh, this guy's definitely a number one guy, but you have so many guys that could be and are at least, you know, like number two guys where you have so much talent in there that you know, you're going to have a pretty good wide receiver core.
If I had to guess, you know, somebody to, you know, who would round out that group or be the first guy in case of an injury, I would guess Micaiah Tung. I wanted to ask you about one trend that I noticed, which is that the roster that Jonathan Smith inherited and has sort of been working with this whole time, there's not a lot of length there. You know, most of them are like, you know, 6 foot or under, including Champ Flemings, who sort of brings the average down quite a bit. On the other hand, it looks like there's a concerted effort to bring more length into the program. Like, in 2020, they took Trevor Pope, who's 6'2". In this cycle, they took Jimmy Valson, who's 6'3". Micaiah Tung, who you mentioned, is 6'2". Those three guys, I believe, are the three most recent wide receivers to enter the program, and they're also the three tallest, you know, receivers in the room. Looks like a concerted effort to sort of literally grow the program. And that's why I would sort of guess, like, Jonathan Smith is like, I need some taller dudes in here, and that if he's, you know, got a slot open to stick somebody into, for, and all else being equal in terms of experience, I would expect he'd go with one of the tall guys. Has he, you know, made mention of that at all, or do you think I'm off base? What do you think?
I don't know that he's made mention of it, but I think you're on the right track there. You can just from, like you said, sort of the trends lately, they are going after the taller guys. So I think it's obviously a effort on their end to get some more height in that wide receiver room.
Well, I mean, like I said, I think, you know, Bradford, because he's the leading receiver, and Lindsay, because he's the sweet man and apparently backup quarterback, like, obviously they have jobs locked down. And then Beeson and Harrison are both, you know, over 6 foot. And so it's like, you know, what are you going to do? Bench those guys to get an extra inch on the field? Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I do worry about my man, Champ Flennings, you know, like, going from a 5'5 receiver to a 6'3 receiver. Like, I think you could do some stuff there. What do you think? Is his job in danger at all?
I think he'll still, I would say no. I think he's still going to get plenty of run out there. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, one of the receivers that's out there constantly, because at 5'5", I don't know that he could be. But I think he's going to be out there enough that he's still going to find a way to make some plays. And I do have I'm all of like 5'7 and 140 pounds. So seeing a little dude out there it makes me happy. So
definitely seen him make plays after the catch, where the fact that he can instantly change direction and throw off a big safety who's coming for him. Like, I've seen it happen. It's hilarious. And I look forward to seeing it again.
Well, you just look back at, like, one of my favorite Oregon State receivers was James Rogers, who was, he was 5'8", so he's a giant compared to Champ Flemings, but still, he had that same little sneak around, and all of a sudden, you know, just a tiny little guy gets hidden sometimes. And
yeah, I'm looking forward to, like, one of those, you know, annexation of Puerto Rico type of plays where they hide the dude behind the line. Like, yeah, that's what I want to see.
And with Jonathan Smith's offense, he definitely could. He pulls out some weird shit every now and then.
All right, let's talk about the offensive line. As far as I can tell, bringing everybody back, who was a starter anyway, Onesimus Clark, who was playing in the 2019, decided to, I think, retire. But we didn't see him during the season. Is that right?
Yeah, I think he sat out last season.
Yeah, but I believe, you know, the upshot of that is that the five dudes who were, you know, starting, I believe they played every snap, and B, I believe all five of those dudes are back. I'll name them from left to right. It's Joshua Gray, the left tackle, Jake Levengood, the left guard, Nathan Eldridge, the center, Nuski Abonum, the right guard, Brandon Kipper, the right tackle.
Yeah, they were a solid line, so it's good to have them all five coming back.
By the way, I was reading last year's article. You totally nailed it, because they had to replace some seniors, or if you recall, from the 2019 squad. And you nailed exactly what the starting lineup was going to be, including Gray and Levengood, who we hadn't really seen before. So way to go, Travis.
There we go. Sometimes I know things.
Yeah. All right. During the spring game, Nathan Eldridge was not available. He just had, like, a nicked up hand, so they were holding him out. He was the guy who came from Arizona, I think, like, along with or right after Jim Mahalchuk, the offensive line coach. We mentioned him in the intro. I agree with you. I think Mahalchuk is an excellent offensive line coach and has sort of, like, worked miracles. Anyway, Nathan Eldridge was unavailable, and so they moved the left guard, Jake Levengood, over when they were playing the ones to snap the ball. And the dude they brought off up in order to be the replacement left guard was Corbin Sorensen, the transfer last year from Portland State, who we talked about a little bit. He had been Portland State's like starting right guard for like 3 years and transferred in. So a lot of experience there. I think this is a fairly experienced line. I would expect that Sorensen, well, first of all, I would expect that Eldridge will be 100% healthy and snapping the ball. And second of all, the Corbin Sorensen, that indicates that he's the sixth man. And so that's at least some decent depth. They've been in Mahalchik's system for a while, and I expect the development to be pretty good. We're not talking about the greatest talents in the world. In fact, Nusky Abonim, I believe, is unranked coming out of high school, but he's a redshirt senior. You know, I sort of expect this to be another Oregon State line, kind of like 2019, where it's like, yeah, this is an experienced group with a lot of reps. They have a good offensive line coach. They know what the system is because they've been in it for a while. Not just the offensive line system, but like the entire offense, because, you know, Jonathan Smith's now, this is going to be his, you know, fourth year. And so I'm expecting, you know, pretty good things from this offensive line. I'll stop there. Do you think I've gotten any of that wrong?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it all on the head. They were a solid group last year, and you're getting the same top six, actually, because I think Sorensen was the sixth man up last mm-hmm. year. And obviously, you do worry about the depth if, yeah. you know, if the injury bug comes yeah. takes a few guys.
Well, it would need to take two. I guess that's what I was saying. I think that Sorensen, you know, because of his experience, is a pretty adequate backup, you know, and there's not going to be a big fall off if one guy gets hurt. But if two guys gets hurt, yeah, I think I'm there with you because, like, I mean, the rest of the, I believe there's four walk-ons, eight returners on scholarship, and then three new guys, and like zero of the dudes in this room are even high three stars. We're talking about low three stars across the board. And on top of that, I don't think any of these guys have really, other than the six that we have mentioned, have played at all before. With the exception, actually, let me correct that. There's one guy who came in as a transfer from Utah State, Hennelly Bloomfield. I think he's the seventh man because he's the only guy with some starting experience. He had four starts last year, or in 2019. He was injured in 2020. He's played, according to Utah State's website, 424 offensive snaps as a redshirt freshman in 2019. I think that's it, though. I think everybody else has not played. Do you think? Have I got that right?
Yeah, as far as I know, I don't remember seeing any of the other guys on the field other than maybe they snuck out there for a play.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's, I did forget about Bloomfield there for a second. So yeah, he's probably seventh man. But also, you know, a couple years ago when we were looking at replacing several guys on the line, you sort of looked at some of the things, you went, oh no. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's some more hidden talent in there. But it does start, the questions do start quite a bit after the first seven.
Yeah, like it's remarkable how much it's just a big drop off, you know, between, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8 is like a big cliff, in terms of just experience and like, you know, so you know, hopefully, I mean, God help us if they have, you know, three injuries. Like, that's a crazy amount of injuries for an offensive line. Most teams don't get anywhere close to that. So, you know, we're probably not talking about a realistic concern here. But if it happens, you know, you're not talking about plugging in, you know, a four star with a bunch of experience who's a senior. You know, it's like the opposite of that for every one of these guys, right? You know, they're all low three stars. They all are pretty young. Like, I'm looking at, you know, 2019s and 2020s for just about everybody else here. And I haven't really played before. So, like, yeah, keep them healthy. And I think it'll be solid. If they take a bunch of injuries, it won't be. But, like, you know, that's true for most teams. So, yeah. That's sort of it for the personnel on the offense. I'm actually pretty bullish on this offense to be, you know, a good, solid offense. I like the play caller. They're returning a ton of production. I think the offensive line will be solid. I think they're resilient against injuries at every position. Like, there's not a single position on the offense where I'm like, well, if one guy goes down, this offense collapses, which, let me tell you, there's a bunch of teams in the Pac-12 where that ain't true. And I really like the play caller, like I said, which again, a lot of teams in the Pac-12 where that ain't true. And I, you know, I'm not sure where exactly I'm expecting them to fall in like national ranking or anything, but like, I feel like if Oregon State is not winning games, the offense is not going to be the reason why. I think the offense is going to be pretty damn solid and potentially very good. What do you think about that take?
Yeah, no, I'm not that worried about the offense. I think, yeah, especially like you said, there's a lot of experience, there's a decent amount of depth, and there's Jonathan Smith. So
yeah,
you know, that's a good recipe for at least a solid offense.
I mean, he's definitely proven himself. Like, I feel like when I was at the end of 2018 trying to tell everybody, you know, about a team that went like 2-10, you know, at the end of 2018, when I was writing my preview for 2019 and telling everybody, like, I really like all these roster moves. I really like his offense. People were like, you're nuts, dude. And I'm like, nah, look out for this team. And then sure enough, they win 3 more games in 2019. They could have won more, you know, like the Wazoo stupid game. And then, you know, at the end of 2019, I was trying to tell everybody, like, this dude should have won Coach of the Year in 2019. Watch out for him in 2020. Like, this is a dangerous team. And it was like, yeah, I don't know about that. And then he goes out and beats the Ducks. And like, maybe this year people will listen to me when I say, like, look out for Jonathan Smith. He's a really good coach. He manages his roster very well, and he calls a very nice offense. Like, look out for this team. Maybe they'll believe me this time.
Hey everybody, it's your boy, Adam Shamail. Just wanted to take a second from Hithloday's amazing roster preview to plug this very podcast you're listening to. That's right, if you want to help us out, the best way is to go to the Quack12 Patreon, give us just a few measly bucks a month, and for that, you will get so many Oregon Duck episodes, you won't even know what to do with yourself. We cover Oregon football history season by season, we play Duck D&D, and we go through some of the most famous games in Oregon football history. If you're a little strapped for cash, we totally understand. A different way you can help us is going to the Apple Podcast website. Go to the Quack12 page and give us 5 stars. Leave us a review. It helps others find us. And hey, go Ducks. All right, back to the interview.
On the other hand, I think the defense might have a couple of problems. Let's talk about the defense.
That's just sort of been
the
way of Oregon State for forever now, it feels like.
Yeah.
the defense might be a problem. And the answer is usually yes, the defense is a problem.
Yeah, since the days it was called Oregon Agricultural College, maybe?
I don't know. There's some good defenses in the 2000s, but basically, since 2010, well, I don't know that there's been any that are that you want to write home about.
Well, I mean, I guess the issue is that, like, at every position on the defense, I think they – I led off talking about Jonathan Smith saying that I thought that the profile of this team is that it's not going to have any particular player that you're going to write home about in terms of individual talent, but it's solid across the board. However, to the extent that there are anybody who is like individual talents that you'd want to write home about, I think they've all left, you know, on the defense, you know what I mean? Like, Hamilcar Rashid is gone. Jordan Whitley and Evan Bennett, the defensive tackles, are gone. Nashawn Wright is gone. You know what I mean? Like the guys who are like standout playmakers, I think, on the defense, like with the exception of the inside linebackers who are both back and I really like. Although even there was sort of an unexpected departure of one of the backups, Tamalo. You know what I mean? It's sort of like there's shoes to fill on the defense, unlike what we were talking about on the offense.
Yeah, I think you mentioned I was gonna stop you there for a second and make sure Avery Roberts and Omar Spates got their due, but you threw them in there. But yeah, beyond that, it is sort of you're hoping a lot of guys find a way to step up. I'm curious. I think the other guy that could. Depending on health, which has been basically the question his entire career, is Addison Gumbs.
Yeah, we sort of have been waiting for him for a while now.
Yeah, he didn't play last year, and he played, I think, a game and a half in would that have been, 2019?
Yeah.
And in that game of the half, he looked like an absolute freaking stud. Like,
yeah. He was a high four-star. He originally went to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I think he's classified as an outside linebacker and sort of where I expect him to play. He's sort of like, you know, another Hamilcar Rashid. I expect him to be like an excellent pass rusher, but also play, you know, edge contain. You're totally right. Like, injuries have totally limited him. What was the deal in 2020? Why didn't he play?
I think he was still just recovering from that ACL surgery from the year before and just wasn't fully I believe that was the answer. I don't think they ever actually said, but I think it was. And he had had ACL surgery, so I think he was still recovering from that. And he just wasn't fully ready to go.
And then the other just absolutely the most horrendous news I've ever heard in an already like pretty horrible health season in 2020 was Jordan Whitley, who didn't play in 2020. They had discovered a hole in the tissue of his heart. He was the big nose tackle who I thought was going to really anchor this team. And then when they discovered that, I was like, I really downgraded my outlook for Oregon State. Cause I was like, well, I'm not really sure, you know, how they're going to replace him. He has transferred out of the program. And then also it looks like Evan Bennett recently, the guy who I thought would fill Jordan Whitley's shoes, has also transferred out of the program. And I'm sort of left wondering, like, you know, Tim Tibisaar has been running a 3-4, you know, defense with a big dude in the middle since he's gotten there. And I don't really see a big dude in the middle who's on the roster. What's going on here, Travis?
I wish I knew, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I think that is the question most Oregon State fans have right now is what's going on in the middle? Who's going to step up? To me, though, the Whitley transfer was a pretty big surprise. I don't think maybe within the program people saw it coming, but I don't think anyone outside really saw it coming. So I don't know if they were fully prepared for that. Right now there is sort of that lack of that big dude who can just step in and play right in the middle. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's the only guys who are really big, well, there's two of them. There's Alexander Skelton, who's currently listed at 298. He's a walk-on. He played a little bit in 2020. And then Keonti Shad, we mentioned at the top, the transfer in from Minnesota, 247 lists him at 295. But I think he was playing end at Minnesota. I'd have to check on that. The bodies in the middle are missing. I mean, they have dudes who are coming back who I think are fine for the other defensive line positions, right? Like Isaiah Hodgins, who's been there for a while. Isaiah was the wide receiver who was great in 2019. Isaac is his little brother, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Younger brother. Younger. I don't know. Little's different.
Yeah, no, always weird when there's brothers on a team and they play radically different positions. It's sort of like, were the parents conducting an experiment, like feeding them different diets or something?
Well, that also reminds me when you hear, you know, people will talk about some offensive lineman and be like, he's a little undersized. And it's like, well, very true, but let's take a step back.
He's still quite massive.
Yeah.
But a couple other guys who've been there for a while, you know, James Rawls and Simon Sandberg, who've been there for a while. I always thought that those guys were not bad at all. Jeremy Reichner, who we talked about, the JUCO who came in last year.
He came in a couple years ago.
We haven't really seen him.
He's that guy's been through it for such a short time at Oregon State. He's been through it with injuries and and he's Omar Spates' brother. So,
yeah. Tavis Shippen is the other JUCO who came in. Jonathan Smith took a bunch of JUCOs, you know, at the defensive line. Like he walked into that situation. He's like, I immediately need to add a bunch of dudes here. And he did. And just sort of the big problem is, you know, you mentioned it when I asked you about, you know, Jonathan Smith sort of growing the program and, you know, what's been lacking has been size in the trenches. And I sort of think like, yeah, the defensive line is definitely the, you know, between having to take all those JUCOs, the fact that there are like walk-ons, multiple walk-ons, Skelton's not the only one, Cody Anderson's the other one, who's unranked at a high school. Yeah, just a lot of guys having to transfer into the program between that and you know, the Minnesota kid and the two JUCOs and two walk-ons and, like, not a lot of experience here. And I sort of feel like, you know, in 2018, that was Oregon State's, like, giant Achilles heel was that, like, you know, their defensive line just couldn't stop anything. That, like, most offensive lines could just, like, walk forward and get a couple of yards for the running back. And I kind of fear that that's what Oregon State is looking at again, unless there's some reason to hope otherwise. What do you think?
I think that's the biggest concern right now. Yeah. I want to say no things are gonna be fine, but no, I think that's basically every Oregon State fan's concern right now is what's going on there on the defense.
Well, on the other hand, it's, you know, I mentioned that they've still got, I believe, 9 initial counters left. Like, this is definitely the position unit that I've got circled in terms of, like, if Jonathan Smith is going to, you know, use up 9 counters on a position, like, go out and get 4 defensive linemen, you know, like, it's entirely possible that, hell, don't even buy, get offensive linemen who haven't played and just be like, just be a space eater, dude. Like, just
stand there.
Yeah, right. Get some sumo wrestlers, you know, like,
I like it.
I would not be surprised at all to see, you know, we'll record and then the day after we record, you know, he'll announce that he's taken 3 more defensive linemen.
We're going to, right when we stop recording, we're going to get a damn right tweet from Jonathan Smith.
Yeah. but yeah, no, like I said, you know, this is the depth area that I'm concerned about. Not so much like the talent, because I think they're okay there, like not the most talented or whatever, but it's like the structure of this defense needs some much beefier dudes than they've got right now. And yeah, I worry about the structure of the defense if they don't get them. Let's talk about the outside linebackers who in this system tend to play up on the line. Like we mentioned, Hamilcar Rashid is leaving for the NFL. Good for him. Also lost Matthew Tago, who I think I've seen in the past, to the transfer portal. Isaac Garcia also transferring out. He got a couple of reps last year. I think that's it for the outside linebackers leaving. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. Tago's at San Jose State right now, I believe.
He
transferred midseason. That was a little bit of a surprise, but
I was surprised by that one too.
They do have some decent. They did have some. Yeah,
there's
depth,
a.
So I think
there's a
I
lot of guys here.
I think for him it was just sort of a numbers game.
Mm-hmm. Well, they bring back Andre Hughes Murray, who I believe was injured in the past, but came back and had a pretty good season in 2020, as we were expecting. We actually talked about that guy a lot in our podcast last year this time, who looked pretty good in 2020, which was exactly what we predicted when we talked about this last year at this time. Also Riley Sharp playing on the outside, who got a few reps. John McCartan, who I think looked pretty good. You know, this entire group is like over 6'5", Sharp, McCartan, and then the third guy, Stover, who's getting backup reps. Like, I like the length here. And then there's Addison Gums, who we talked about a little bit when we started out with the defense. Like, there's always possibility that he, you know, gets healthy, puts it together, and blows the rest of these guys out of the water. And then there's 4 more dudes, including Samisi Saluni, the guy who's come back from the LDS mission. So, like, a lot of depth here. And I think could be, you know, pretty decent. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think we often talk about Oregon State's defense being a problem, but it's past few years, linebacker hasn't really been that issue. They seem to always have a solid amount of depth. You have quite a few backups who, if they were to start, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, it's a bit of a step down, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a huge drop.
Yeah. So, I mean, I count there are 9 outside linebackers on scholarship, including Saluni coming in from the LDS mission. I think that's tons of depth. There's a lot of experience here between Hughes Murray and Sharp and McCartan. Addison Gums could always put together. And, you know, I don't think that this unit will be a problem by any stretch of the imagination. And there's, you know, possibility that it's, you know, pretty good edge rush. Now, are they going to get Hamilcar Rashid level performance out of them? And, like, like generating tons of sacks and tackles for loss? You know, maybe not, but like I don't think it's going to be the problem on the defense either. I think this is going to be pretty solid, right?
Yeah, I'm not worried about the linebacking position. So yeah. It's the one position on the defense that doesn't stress me out.
Yeah. And then inside linebacker also looks, you know, pretty good. Avery Roberts and Omar Spates, who've now been there for a couple of years as the starters. I think they're a pretty good tandem in the middle. They have liked to operate a four inside linebacker rotation in the past. One of the backups, it appears, Doug Taumalau, has departed the team kind of quietly. Jack Coletto, like I said, the do-everything dude, was one of the backups in 2020. I don't know who the second backup is. There's a couple other guys in the roster. You want to take a stab at it?
I would guess Kyrie Fisher.
Okay. He was the one who got the most tackles out of the rest of them, although yeah, that means two instead of one or zero.
He was he transferred from Arkansas, if I remember correctly.
I have him down as a JUCO, but those guys tend to take winding courses.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there were multiple stops. And he's had, if I remember correctly, he's had some unfortunate luck with injuries. So who knows? But I think health permitting, he would probably be that fourth guy.
Okay.
But you could see, the other one I'd kind of keep an eye on is probably that, two freshmen from last year and Junior Walling and John Miller.
Okay.
I don't know if they're quite at that level that they're ready to step up, but it wouldn't surprise me to see them get a decent amount of play this year.
But again, as we have been talking about with other units, even though, you know, the three dudes who have experience, you know, the other five dudes who are not that experienced, we're not talking about two stars and walk-ons. We're not talking about little guys, you know, either. We're talking about, you know, they're all mid three stars. They've all gotten a couple of reps. They're all, you know, about the right size, you know, for linebackers. They're all around 6'1", 230, you know, in that range, which is about the right size for an inside linebacker. Like, again, you know, just like every other group, except for kind of the defensive line, you know, we're talking about a solid group where they could probably take an injury or two, and you know, it wouldn't be the best thing, obviously, and you're certainly not wishing for injuries, but like, yeah, it'll be solid. It'll, you know, they're not gonna, you know, get into trouble in case there's an injury here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a solid amount of depth there, so.
Well, let's talk about the defensive backs, because this one is the one that, if I had a criticism of the roster management here, I think I would level it at the defensive backs, because they have a ton of depth at safety, right? Akili Arnold and Alex Austin and Jadon Grant and Kaiten Oladapo, Alton Julian. I believe all five of those dudes, who all have double-digit tackles in 2020, I believe all those dudes are classified as safeties, right? None of those guys are outside corners?
Yeah, I think so. Grant moves around a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, they're kind of nickelback safety.
Yeah.
He's sort of a nickelback safety.
Well, I said earlier that Tipisar has been running a 3-4 for a while now, and I should qualify that by saying, like, he does sometimes go, not so much to begin with, but I was seeing it more in 2020 and a little bit in 2019, that he was going to a 3-3-5, you know, with a nickelback a little more often. I think sort of a concession to it being the Pac-12, a lot of folks come in with like we're only a four defensive back system, and then as time goes on, they wind up playing a nickel. But you know, so it's sort of understandable there's more tackles to go around if you consider a nickelback to be a safety. On the other hand, like, they definitely have to operate two outside corners, and I think they've kind of lost all of them, right? Because Nashawn Wright taken off. Isaiah Dunn was the other, you know, corner. And I think that's it. Like, I think that's it in terms of, like, cornerback experience, right?
I mean, yeah. For the most part, Rayshon Wright is back, and he got some experience.
Right.
And Alex Austin has played. There's a couple other guys with experience.
Well, they brought in through the transfer portal Elijah Jones, the from Kansas, who was their starting cornerback in 2020. And that's who I had penciled in Rayshon Wright and Elijah Jones as the starting cornerback, simply because at the previous college they played at, Rayshon Wright at Laney Community College of Last Chance U fame and Elijah Jones at Kansas, they were the, you know, corners there. And I was like, well, that's it. You're done. Do you think it's going to be somebody else?
I think those are kind of your two starters, and then you have a couple guys who've played some, but it is there is a definite question of depth there in the defensive backfield, especially at the corner position.
Do you expect, well, if they want to rotate their corners or otherwise one of those guys is unavailable, do you expect that one of the experienced guys, like, say, Alex Austin or Jadon Grant, moves over to play cornerback? Or do you think they have another dude who we haven't seen before who's more likely to get the backup spots?
I think they're probably moving one of those other guys, one of those, maybe Jadon Robinson.
I mean, that's what I would worry about. I'd worry about, well, first of all, probably going to be plugging in two new cornerbacks who are starters. And that, like, the depth there as, you know, corner, you know, outside cornerback specialists, you know, is pretty limited. And like, yeah, I would sort of expect to be able to throw on this team. I don't know how much of a, you know, the defensive line is going to be penetrating, and I don't know how much the cornerbacks are going to be able to cover. That would be my concern, you know, defensively for this team. Do you think I'm seeing that the right way?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. that is the issue.
Yeah, I mean, That it sort of looks like a team that might be in a lot of shootouts, you know, which is sort of what Oregon State's look like. If you pull up all those scores for, you know, all those, you know, one score games over the last 10 years, like, look them up. You know, you're not talking about games that are like 10-7 games. No. There's one of them that was like the Washington game in 2019, to like the 19-7 game, where Oregon State was just hammering them on defense. I love that one. But, you know, those are pretty rare for Oregon State the last couple of years. It's pretty much been, you know, games that are like 31-27, you know, 27-21, 41-38, you know, games like that. And I sort of see like more games like that in the future for Oregon State, given this defensive profile.
I'd had hope for the defense to kind of step up a little bit more as the year's gone on. And they have a little bit. I mean, it's gone from a few years ago being an absolute dumpster fire of a defense to
something
you can throw out there and you can still win games. But
that 28 defense was like, I mean, it just wasn't, you know, there are only 130 teams in FBS. So to say a team is 130th, like, well, potentially they're worse than even that number, you know, and like, my God, like, by advanced statistical metrics, it was one of the worst defenses in the history of college football. And then in 2019, it was a respectable defense, which is like, that's a hell of an improve. Like, even if they only improved to, like, you know, the 90s, that's still like, that's incredible, you know, like. But I sort of think, well, I sort of would have thought that 2021 would have shaped up to maybe be a better defense, but then these departures have really caught me by surprise. Like, I think maybe caught the staff by surprise too. Like, losing both of the nose tackles and losing both of the cornerbacks is like, that's a rough spot to be in. Even if the rest of the defense is, you know, like we said, fine, you know, those are positions that it's very difficult to replace. And I guess, like I said, it would be something to really keep your eye on for the transfer portal, because like, this is like a prognosis that could change in a day if they get a bunch of transfers, you know, at those positions, you know,
hoping that there's some more help on the way. But I do think even if there isn't, I think this is still a defense that is not going to be good, but I don't think you're going back to that 130 or anything like that. I think there's still enough talent out there to at least be a defense that you can still win games with. But they're not going to win you games, but you can win games with them.
Yeah, you know, it just means that they're going to need to win with offense. But, you know, like we said, we sort of, you know, have high expectations of this offense. So, like, it is potentially a winning formula if, you know, things come together well, which, you know, that's what good coaching gets you, is things coming together well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, I forgot my transition, which this is definitely something that'll be edited out. Here we go. Speaking of high expectations of the day, let's talk about this 2021 football schedule. Travis, this is the segment where we force our guests to actually give us a win total for the regular season.
All right.
You're going to look like a genius if you get this, if you just nail this perfectly. I think last time we talked to you, we were probably talking about like it was either a 10-game season. I think we were talking about a 10-game season.
Yeah, I think we were talking about a 10-game season that started, you know, at the normal time and
So yeah, this should be easier to get than last time.
Maybe. Yeah, I think I probably guessed more than two with a 10-game season, but you know.
I think so. I would hope so. Yeah. Yeah, I bet you predicted a win over Oregon, too. That's my guess.
I'm sure I did. I knew it was coming. I was not at all surprised and wasn't stunned sitting in the... I watched that game with my father-in-law, who's a massive Duck fan. That was fun.
Oh, man.
I was in here in my living room doing a little dance after Chance Nolan snuck that one in. And then gritting my teeth, hoping nothing happened in the final, 30 seconds or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. And nothing really did it. No. Yeah, nothing to write home about. So let's get into this. I'll really quickly read the schedule here. Here we go. So it's September 4th at Purdue. That is a fun game. I'll be ready for that. Wow. At Purdue, and then on September 11th versus the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. That was a game I remember really enjoying a couple years back, too. That was nuts. Oregon State versus Hawaii.
I don't remember enjoying that game. I remember. After that game, it was on Facebook.
I remember that game was on Facebook at midnight.
And it was just...
Yeah,
absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I was struggling to stay awake at first, and then Hawaii really Oregon State was winning at halftime, mm-hmm. I believe, and then just complete second half collapse. And I was like, oh, I'm awake now.
Wasn't there something?
This is hilarious. I think
there was a fight between two Oregon State players.
That's right. Yeah, there was some stuff going on the sidelines, and then after the game, I think there was some pushing and shoving between the teams. It was. Mm-hmm.
I freaking loved that Rainbow Warriors team that season too. they were like one of the best teams of the Pac-12, if I remember correctly.
And then their coach moved on to the Pac-12.
Yeah, now I don't like him as much.
What? Oh, Rolovich. Yeah, he's a different dude. He's interesting. He's a little funny. I don't know what it is about Washington State that attracts the.
Weirdo coach.
Weirdo that I'm not sure I like, but I still find absolutely fascinating.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I don't really like you, but I still... You're very interesting. You're intriguing.
Speaking of very interesting weirdos, then you play the Idaho Vandals, who back again, another not like Pac-12 opponent, but has a lot of history with Pac-12 teams. Back in the day was a serious rival, I do believe, with the Oregon schools. That'll be in Corvallis. And then at USC, that'll be, oh yeah, the Giant Killers coming down there. So at USC, September 25th, that's how you start. Pac-12 play, then against Washington, so that's a guaranteed win. That's versus Washington and Corvallis at Washington State on October 9th. Who the hell knows how that's going to go?
That's every year I look at the Washington State game on the schedule, and I at least have, for the most part, I can look at games and go, I think this is what's going to happen. Washington State, I don't know. It's probably going to be weird, though. It's going to be weird. That's the only accurate prediction you can make about any Washington State game is it's going to be weird.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then, so after Washington State, October 23rd versus Utah, and then October 30th at California, following that at Colorado. And then final three games here, we got versus Stanford on November 13th. Versus Arizona State, maybe some revenge there. And then at Oregon at the end of the regular season, the way it should be, where, I don't know, should be a fun one. So those 12 games, Travis, how many wins you see coming out of that?
Oh, let's go.
You don't have to give us the specific wins, just how many wins, you know.
I'm gonna go probably higher than I should. Let's go 7.
Hell yeah. That's the kind of prediction I like.
I was trying to figure it out. I think I got a few that I'm pretty confident in, and then a bunch of games that I'm like, I don't know, but they could win. So I'm going to give them some of those, and we're going to end up at 7.
I've got Oregon State going to a bowl. I don't know about 7. I think 6 is more likely, but I think they make it this year because I mean, I think the three out of conference games are all definitely winnable games. Like Purdue had a lousy season. Purdue had a weird season last year. Like they started out by beating Iowa and Illinois, and then their Wisconsin game was canceled, and then they lost their last four games. And they didn't even get to play Indiana. Like, that was canceled. And they rescheduled, and it was canceled again. It was like, it was not a good team. I got high hopes for the Beavers coming out and beating them. I do think the revenge factor, like, they're going to get Washington. Mark that one down.
That's one that I feel good about for some reason. And they've been close recently, and it's just, yeah. And it's at home.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it was the only home cooking. The only home cooking was what saved Washington last year. So on the other hand, there's no way they're beating USC in the Coliseum. What has been since like 1950?
Something like that. They haven't won down there.
But like the back half of the schedule, like the, you know, Wazoo through Arizona State. I frankly think that Oregon State is like, I would put them at about the same level as those six teams, you know, give or take a little bit. And like, I definitely think if Oregon State is sort of the team that I'm expecting them to, I think they split those six. You know, I think they get like three games there, you know, or at the very least two. I would be shocked if they only got one win out of that Wazoo, Utah, Cal, Colorado, Stanford, Arizona State run. I seem going to a bowl.
And as always, I'm predicting 11 straight wins for the Beavers and then a loss in their 12th game. All right. That's always the dream. That's always what I'm going for, is two undefeated Oregon teams.
No, you can't dream of that, because that would involve beating USC in the Coliseum. And if Oregon State does that, they're just going to fire Clay Helton on the spot. And like, that's we can't have that, man. Like, sorry, Travis. The Bees are just going to have to take that one for the team.
It was a couple years ago when Oregon State was still pretty bad. I remember looking at like all their recent wins after a season, and I think like most of the coaches had been fired shortly after losing to Oregon State. But I think that was a couple years ago. No, I think that was after Jonathan Smith's first year. I was looking at like the wins from him and the handful of wins from the Gary Anderson era, and I think everybody we beat has been fired.
Yeah, Mike McIntyre,
remember Mark Helfrich.
Yeah, we were joking about that. we were joking about that as like Benny the Beaver is the Grim Reaper. Yes. You know, like if Benny shows up at your door, just run out the back door, jump the back gate. Because
I do love
look out, Mario Cristobal. Like,
I do love that it's not like the programs are being like, wow, those Beavers, like they're really like coming up. It's like, what is wrong with
what
us?
Just happened? Something has to change. We have to fire our coach.
I know. We're going to have to start firing, obviously, you know, Kelly Graves, Dana Altman, these guys got to go.
Do.
Cristobal, too.
Please,
yeah.
Please
do. I mean,
Melissa Lombardi.
Everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's
clean
go.
House. Travis, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Once again, we'll plug your Twitter here, at Travis Johannes. Johannes, and there's a little underscore in between those two. We've always appreciated your work at Building the Dam, and we love having you on the pod, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's fine. Finally, now I'm starting to think about football season, which I hadn't been really, but now I'm just kind of forcing to. We'll see. Now I'm excited for my 7-win season.
There you go, man. And Hithloday, as always, a pleasure to talk to you.
Always fun. This is going to be a good article to write. We're in the home stretch, and we're talking about just the way that it's lined up is like the teams that I'm most interested in and have the highest potential of beating the Ducks we've saved for the second half of the season. And so it only makes sense to start off with Oregon State.
Precisely. All right. We'll see y'all next week, Quack 12 fans.
Take care.